KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum, we continue our coverage on the wildfires devastating the North Bay as the death toll rises to 24. And at 11:30, we're planning to bring you a briefing from state officials with the latest information on what California agencies are doing to support and assist firefighting and support for evacuees. It's all coming up next after the news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. In this extra hour of Forum this morning, with our continued coverage of updating and letting you know exactly what's going on as best we can in the wildfires that are raging, we're going to continue to update you on the Northern California wildfires. And winds didn't blow as hard as expected last night. The deadly Tubbs Fire burning between Santa Rosa and Calistoga is now 10% contained. The death toll has risen to 24 from the North Bay fires, with another Sonoma County death. Unfortunately, and at 11:30, we plan on bringing you a briefing from state emergency officials. We want to start with Bob Fenton. He's administrator for Region 9, which includes California, for the Federal Emergency Management Agency. Welcome, Bob Fenton.
Hey, thank you, Michael, for having me on.
Glad to have you on. And I hope this doesn't sound impertinent, but at the end of the last hour we did, someone sent a question in and said we were talking about Santa Rosa. Where is FEMA? Suggesting perhaps or intimating that maybe FEMA isn't where it's supposed to be or isn't where they hoped it would be. Where is FEMA?
Well, we've been involved since the fire started. Sunday evening, we received requests from the state for fire management assistance grants. Was up throughout the evening approving those that allow us to support firefighting resources and helping with the immediate response to the virus. Obviously, because of the winds, most of the focus was on evacuations, but we declared 10 fire management assistance grants through the evening and through Monday. Monday afternoon to Monday evening, the governor made a request to the president for a major disaster declaration. The president approved that Tuesday morning. For us to help with not only the firefight, but helping with mask care and other things like communications and those kind of things. And we've been doing that, providing every federal resource from the different federal wildland firefighting agencies, from Forest Service, the Department of Interior, to BLM, and providing resources to help the fire, including DOD resources.
What are those resources specifically?
Firefighting resources, strike teams, engines, water tenders, aircraft, both fixed wings and rotary wing. And so those aircraft have been provided since the beginning from the federal government and continue to be provided. In addition, we continue to pull more in.
And that's because of the emergency declaration by Governor Brown?
That's both based on the fire management assistance grants and the major declaration grant by the president. To provide those resources, yes.
And how's this federal support coordinated?
There's a state operations center up here that California runs. There's a joint team with different federal agencies from the federal government and state agencies here all working together to support the local governments that are impacted by this event. So the Unified Coordination Group is here in Sacramento with different incident command posts out there managing the fire along with local governments.
You expecting additional federal support?
Oh, definitely. This event, you know, we're kind of right now in the response phase, making sure that we're saving lives, making sure that we're helping with the mass care and evacuations. I brought in 100 ambulances to help with evacuations as necessary as conditions change. We brought in communications equipment. And many other resources to help on that side. More importantly, we're starting to get prepared for now the recovery side and the reconstruction side, and started doing assessments yesterday to see, how severe and how impacted is the area, and to really determine not only from FEMA and the Stafford Act what assistance we bring, but really what assistance does the whole federal government need to provide, knowing that there's many federal programs out there that will be of aid to those that have been impacted by these events.
How do you decide with recovery and reassessment to essentially set up triage? I mean, what's most important?
Well, we're going to, right now, it's a process of what we could get into and assess, and we were able to get into the fires in the Sonoma County area, the Tubbs Fire yesterday, and assess probably about half of that fire that starts giving us indications of what types of programs we need to bring to bear. So we start with that, and we know how many people are sheltered right now. We kind of know we have a good idea of what needs they have right now, why they're sheltered and can't get back into their homes. With that, we start looking at what programs we could bring to bear that will help them immediately while they're still evacuated, and what programs we need to have ready to go once we could access the area, and starting to plan for that with the counties already. For example, debris removal, to start removing debris, household hazardous material removal, as will be significant household hazardous materials left there from the burned areas. So we are working with the different federal agencies that have authorities to go in there, like EPA, that's assessing that right now and working with the counties to make sure that we clean up these areas and make them safe for people to re-enter.
Bob Fenton on the line with us, Region 9 Administrator for FEMA, that is the Federal Emergency Management Agency, and that covers a lot of regions, Arizona, California, Hawaii, Nevada, and the Pacific Islands. What can you say to our local listeners here in the Bay Area or people throughout the nine Bay Area counties that they need to know about what FEMA is doing and how they can perhaps even give some assistance or really help out?
Definitely. Well, first, let me just say that my region is located here in the Bay Area. And you know, my team has family members up there, and we're all saddened to learn, you know, of not only the deaths from this event, but just the sheer magnitude and loss of homes from this event. So we'll be here not only now, but we'll continue to be here through the reconstruction and are committed to do that. As far as what individuals need to know is, one, we're in a dynamic event with winds still changing, with predicted winds for this weekend, and they need to listen to their local emergency officials. They need to be able to be ready to evacuate. If asked to evacuate, don't wait. Make sure that you have a plan. Make sure you know routes to get out of your area. Make sure you maintain communications with someone as you move out of that area. Secondly, as far as helping out, I would go ahead and work through the voluntary agencies, organize an active in disasters. And there's a website on California's webpage, and you can also go to FEMA.gov and get more information on how to assist and how to provide resources. When we talk about reconstruction and recovery of this area, it's really going to take a whole community effort. So not only federal government, working with state government and local government, more importantly, working with businesses, nonprofits, and individuals to help these individuals recover. It's a long road ahead, and we'll be there with them.
Well, thank you so much, Bob Fenton. Appreciate your being with us. Bob Fenton, again, is Administrator for Region 9, which includes California, for FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency. We're going to bring Assemblyman Jim Wood on next. Assemblyman Wood represents the 2nd Assembly District. He's from Healdsburg. He's a Democrat. The 2nd District includes all of Del Norte, Trinity, Humboldt, and Mendocino counties, plus northern and coastal Sonoma County, including the northern half of Santa Rosa. And Jim Wood, good to have you with us. Welcome.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, I appreciate your being with us. You just got an update from the Mendocino County Sheriff. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I just spoke to him, and a couple of important things that are going on up there. And first of all, thank you. I think as we look at all the incidents and all the disasters throughout the state, it's easy to sometimes forget our neighbors to the north. The Mendocino County fire complex up there is now the number 3 state priority of the 10 declared disasters. The fire grew about 1,000 acres last night to 30,000 in size. We now have 8 confirmed fatalities. There is no local cell service in many of these areas, so they're communicating via FM radio and ham radio. The repeater was damaged, and so that's a limiting. That's affecting how law enforcement's able to communicate just in general. And then the concern about the red flag situation tonight and tomorrow. So the winds are very localized sometimes, and on these higher peaks and these unusual areas that, well, on the lower elevations, you might find that the winds are pretty calm. You get up on peaks and things, and they're just roaring up there. So it's a really challenging situation right now.
What kind of concerns are you hearing from your constituents?
I think there's a lot of concern, just the lack of information, and everybody, I will tell you that in general, we're doing everything we possibly can. But you know, this is a very rural county, and just in general, we don't have a lot of the robust infrastructure that a lot of other counties do. So cell service is always a challenge in Mendocino County, and in a situation like this, it's even more so. So things that, you know, while in the city of Santa Rosa and Sonoma County, a lot of that's up and running now. It's not in Mendocino County, and that's going to be a problem. So communications are a real challenge.
What do you see or foresee on that score with communications?
I'm sorry?
What do you foresee about communications, I mean, particularly as we move forward?
I think, you know, obviously as more and more resources pour in, the sheriff's encouraged that now being the number three priority in the state, they're going to have more and more resources pouring in there, and that will help. So, you know, when you look at trying to reestablish communications, that's what we call recovery, and you can't get in to do that until it's safe. And a lot of these areas just aren't safe yet. So that's part of the challenge. So earlier this week, the city of Willits had no cell communication at all. They had no natural gas. So AT&T was able to get in and put up a portable cell tower and bring them all online on Wednesday. So I'll tell you, the carriers, are stepping up, whether it's AT&T, Verizon, or whatever, and doing what they can. But everybody is stretched incredibly thin, and it's just going to take a little time.
Well, we hope for the best, and I thank you so much for joining us, Assemblymember Jim Wood, Democrat from Hillsburg, representing the 2nd Assembly District. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks so much. Bye.
And now with us is Bill Martin, Chief Meteorologist with KTVU Channel 2. Good to have you, Bill Martin. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, busy day for sure. Busy week.
Busy is putting it mildly. I don't know if we can find a word to describe, but it's certainly busy on your end trying to get a hold of the weather, especially where the winds are concerned. Can you give us an update on expected wind conditions over maybe the next few days, what we know?
Well, here's what's going on. As you know, I mean, we're in fire season. It hasn't rained in 5 months, so that doesn't help. And then you get into a pattern like this where we get these troughs that have been tweaking through. With a trough is essentially what would bring rain in the winter months, but these are weaker because it's transition season fall. They go through, and then the high pressure builds in behind it. That's what happened last night. That's what happened last Sunday night, and that's what's probably going to happen again Saturday night. And that creates this offshore wind event, and that's where we are now. We're in this on-again, off-again onshore wind. These troughs, these impulses keep moving through the upper levels of the jet stream, and then they create a vacuum at the surface and the high bumps in. So what's happening? Sunday night, we're going all the way back. That was a ridiculously strong event. That was a 20 millibar gradient between Winnemucca, Nevada, and San Francisco. I know it doesn't mean anything to most people, but when you see that, you know the winds are going to howl. Last night, the pressure gradient was less than half of that. That's why the winds didn't howl. As we move forward, the winds are going to be doing the same thing with another impulse moving through the upper level of the atmosphere on Saturday night into Sunday morning. The winds are going to pulse up out of the north-northeast.
How certain is that, particularly in light of the fact that there was talk about the winds pulsing up and going up to 50 miles per hour, and it just didn't happen? I mean, they were strong. They were around 25, but they didn't get up to that level.
Well, that's what I forecast last night. I said, what you're seeing, and this is one of the things you have to understand with weather, when you look directly at the models, you especially the in this case the National Weather Service or Cal Fire, they're going to go on the high end of everything. So when they said gusts of 50, I wasn't seeing that. I was seeing gusts of 25, maybe 30. What they're doing is they're being overly cautious, and they need to be. We're forecasting. Last night, those winds were over forecast, definitely, by the Weather Service, by a lot of people. But that's what you have to do when you've got multiple fires burning and people being evacuated. But I'm here to tell you now, the pattern is such. What happened Sunday night was, that's probably a once every 200-year event, maybe once every 150-year event in that region, in the Fountain Grove region. What happened? That pressure gradient, that strong of a high, that powerful wind. if anybody listening right now knows Fountain Grove in that area, I want you to picture that road, Fountain Grove Parkway. That thing runs north. It runs basically from the south to the north, just basically southeast to the or southwest to the northeast. The winds that night at about 3 in the morning were gusting down that thing 60 and 70 miles an hour, and they were coming directly from that direction. So they were coming from the northeast. There was funneling that occurred. There was something called the Venturi effect. It's if you had any physics, you'll remember this. The air got funneled, and as it was sinking from this high, it was being funneled, and it blasted out there into that Coffee Park region of Santa Rosa. That's an urban wildfire. I've never seen that before. A little bit of that happened last year in Lake County, but I've never seen it in such an urban environment. We had pizza bars. We had, you know, this was an industrial area. This was a commercial area.
Bill, there are folks who have fought fires their whole lives who never saw anything like that.
No,
so you're not alone as a meteorologist. Can you just give us a quick squib on what the humidity looks like moving ahead too?
Yeah, well, what's happening right now is you got a bit of a westerly flow. Okay, so last night the winds did go north. The surface winds were mostly north-northwest, which wasn't horrible. The upper-level winds were more northeast. The firefighters, if you watched last night, we said this. We said they're going to get a break tonight compared to what they could have had. Today, we're seeing a little bit more of a westerly flow. That's onshore. That's taking the smoke. It's dispersing it a little better. For those of you in the Bay Area, you're probably breathing a little easier. Air quality is still not great, but better. And it's helping firefighters because, as you point out, you're vecting humidity into those zones. So last night at times, we had humidities in Napa, 75-80%. That's huge for firefighters. So they're getting a little bit of a break today. I think they're going to get a good handle on this fire. They got a long, long way to go. I'm just saying the first 2 days, they weren't fighting fire. We were fleeing. We were evacuating. That you don't fight fires like that, especially on Sunday, Monday. But now, today, and yesterday, they're having an opportunity to fight these fires. You're seeing more air support by far. And they're going to play that all the way till dark. Then they're going to get up Saturday morning. They're going to have a chance to hammer on it a little more. And then Saturday night becomes the crucial time again, Saturday night to Sunday morning.
Bill Martin, appreciate very much your being with us. And thank you. Thank you for that expertise. Bill Martin is chief meteorologist for Channel 2. That's KTVU Television. And let's bring Lisa Fasano on here. She's director of communications at Bay Area Air Quality Management District. And Lisa Fasano, needless to say, first let me welcome you officially. Glad to have you back with us on Forum. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you to be here.
There's a good deal of concern, and in fact, we just heard meteorologist Bill Martin say that the humidity has decreased, so the breathing is better, but people are still wondering what's the best thing to do other than staying inside. I mean, there are a lot of people who are saying, get out of Dodge. The air is just too heavy to breathe.
Well, we are heavily impacted with smoke, specifically in the North Bay counties, but also throughout the Bay Area as well. It's just being capped here. All of this smoke is just sort of sitting in our region, and it's not moving out. And with the fires still burning the way they are, we just keep getting more and more impacted by smoke. So we are seeing some very unhealthy air quality conditions in many parts of the Bay Area, and it's advised that people don't do outdoor exercise. It's advised that people stay indoors where they have air conditioning and filtered air, that they put air conditioning units on recirculate. And for those who are seriously impacted, it would be advised that they get out of the area because we are seeing serious air quality problems here in the Bay Area.
Well, you're talking, I presume, about people, for example, with asthma or emphysema or children who are perhaps respiratory problems, that sort of thing?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And especially those in the northern counties that may be impacted with those conditions, because breathing up in the northern counties is just going to be very, very, very difficult due to all the smoke.
In fact, here's a listener by the name of Herbierto who says, I'm in Oakland, can smell smoke and can see ash falling. Should I be wearing a mask?
Well, Oakland, air quality in Oakland is unhealthy right now. So if they're going to be working outside or they're going to be outside, then if they have an N95 mask, that would probably be wise to do. You want to get an N95 mask at a minimum. Anything other than that really isn't going to be helpful. And the problem is, I think that many of the places where we would find these, the hardware stores,
they're sold out.
They're sold out, yeah. So, you know, the Air District just called in. We ordered 20,000 of them, and we're delivering them to the northern counties, and they'll be distributed up there. And we're trying to get more, but we recognize everyone else is looking for these masks as well.
Another listener, Hannah, says, I saw advice to run your air conditioning but close your air intake. I'm not sure how to do that. Any advice on how to find the air intake?
You know, I don't know. Each individual unit would have its own sort of instructions. I think the best thing for her to do would be to look that up on the manufacturer's website to see how they might close the air intake. But that is absolutely what you want to do. You don't want to draw outdoor air into your air conditioning unit.
Do you know where people can get respiratory masks? I mean, if so many places are sold out, you don't necessarily have enough time to go online and look. Any thoughts?
Well, I know that when we went and got them, we went to the Central Valley. We went to Patterson to get them. So we went out of the region to get them and to bring them back in. And so anyone who knows relatives or has relatives that are outside the Bay Area and can have people go and get them for them and send them here or bring them, that would be advisable.
And any other advice, I mean, other than staying in, turning on the air conditioner, and if necessary, getting out of town or having a mask, any other things that come to mind?
Well, I mean, if you're going to be outside and you don't have a mask, you can soak a towel with water, and that can help if you have to work outside or be outside for any reason. But unfortunately, you know, the North Bay County specifically, but the rest of us in the Bay Area, we're just in a very difficult air quality conditions right now. And until we get some winds and until the fires get knocked down, we are going to be suffering with this air quality situation probably through the weekend.
Lisa Fasano, again, is Director of Communications and Outreach with the Bay Area Air Quality Management District. She regulates stationary sources of air pollution in the nine counties that surround the San Francisco Bay. Let me bring some callers on here. We'll go to Petaluma. Sean, thank you for waiting. You're on the air.
Hi, I'm a nurse practitioner at the Petaluma Health Center, and I just want to let people know that we are seeing patients. We're open for business, and we are also open at the Rohnert Park Community Health Center. So we can see patients at low cost and sometimes no cost. We're trying to siphon off those people who would otherwise go to the ER, who might be well served at a community health center, because two of the hospitals up in Santa Rosa are closed, and so we're impacted in terms of patient access.
All right. I thank you for that and appreciate you letting people know about it. Let me bring another caller on here. Michael, good morning.
Oh, hey, how's it going?
Thank you. Okay. I mean, when you think about all that we're dealing with here, I'm not sure how to answer that question, but go ahead and let me know what's on your mind.
Oh, I know. I'm calling to kind of bash on PG&E about their upkeep of power lines in the North Bay. I grew up in Sonoma County. I actually grew up right near where the Tubbs Fire originated in Knights Valley, California. That's in between Calistoga and Healdsburg along Highway 128.
Yeah.
Anyway, my family, my brother and my mom and her tenant are currently there. They're sheltering in place, and the fire has burned all around them. You know, I'm worried about them and whatnot. But
you're also angry at PG&E or concerned about what their role is in all this, and so are many.
Well, yeah, I mean, they do. I don't know. I mean, I know that PG&E is responsible for upkeep of the power lines and whatnot, and I know that I'm pretty sure that they have the actual tree maintenance contracted out to Davy Tree Company. You know, that's like a big major tree company in California. You can literally drive alongside, for example, Highway 128 or Bennett Lane or Tubbs Lane or any of these, or even just in town or on any of these major roads, and you'll see things like wild table grapes growing on top of power lines. You'll see large branches from fir trees, like heavy trees and heavy tree limbs, you know, near transformers, near power lines, near telephone poles, and they, you know, don't do a good job maintaining them.
All right, Michael, let me thank you for that call. There has been certainly a lot of concern expressed about PG&E. We've talked about it a good deal. We've also talked about almost a central theme, the lack of information. And let me read something that Troy writes. He says, my family's in Santa Rosa. Within an evacuation zone without power and spotty cell service, there was and still is a tremendous amount of misinformation regarding where the fire is and what it was threatening. They keep getting reports that the fire is blocks away, when in fact it had changed directions and was miles away. Access to accurate information has been non-existent. Well, not entirely. We're certainly trying to keep you as well informed and as accurately informed as we can here on KQED Radio. And as I said earlier, we're going to be bringing you a live briefing on the fires from the Governor's Office of Emergency Services. But I want to remind you that you can find KQED's ongoing coverage of the fires at kqed.org/wildfires. And I want to thank Bill Martin with us before, Chief Meteorologist from KTVU, Bob Fenton of FEMA, Lisa Fasano of Bay Area Air Quality Management, and also, actually, Lisa, I think you're still with us, aren't you? I'm saying goodbye to you, and we still have another moment with you.
I am.
Well, we have seconds left, but what, again, especially children with special needs?
Well, certainly children with special needs. I mean, I would avoid outdoor activity in areas where you've got heavy smoke and where you can smell smoke and taste smoke. And I would recommend people go to baaqmd.gov and check about air quality. And if you go that direction, you can find out what the current air quality readings in the area are. But I've been checking it regularly, and we're in the red and orange and purple in some cases throughout the Bay Area.
Yeah, it's orange almost everywhere, in fact, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. Thank you, Lisa. Appreciate again and grateful for your time.
Thank you.
Let me bring in some callers, find out what's on your minds. Alexandra joins us from Santa Rosa, which we spent a whole last hour on. Alexandra, welcome.
Thank you. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
We are right now in San Francisco with my family, but we are from Santa Rosa, and we live in Annandale Heights. And I just wanted to make a comment about what happened on Sunday evening and early Monday morning, because we didn't hear any kind of an alert. There was no Amber Alert or anything going on that evening, that when I went to sleep, I smelled smoke, but I didn't hear any siren. It was extremely quiet and very calm, that even though I smelled smoke, I went back to sleep. And then by around 3:30 or 4 o'clock, I got some text from friends saying, you have to evacuate, there's fire. But none of my friends heard the siren, no ambulance, fire trucks, nothing. And so we were wondering, why is it that the Santa Rosa County or city didn't alert anyone as far as a fire going on in the city? Because that would have helped a lot with the evacuation.
Alexandra, I wish we had the mayor still with us, but we don't, unfortunately. He was with us last hour. But your complaint is one that we're hearing, again, about getting that information and getting it to citizens much more readily and more promptly. And I thank you for bringing it up and bringing it to our attention. I want to read a comment, speaking about bringing things to our attention, from a listener named John, who says, why doesn't, we just heard from Michael, a caller, concern about PG&E, and there's been a lot of concern about PG&E. And John says something to certainly think about. Why doesn't PG&E just shut down the grid from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. on Diablo wind nights? Blackouts are a lot easier to deal with than wildfires, and these blackouts could be predicted and people could prepare for them. After a few years, people would be accustomed and difficulties would be solved. It would be perhaps easier than putting wires underneath the Let me get Tracy on her next. Tracy, join us. Hi.
Hi. I've been calling all around for the last 24 hours because my son has respiratory issues. And I found a warehouse in southern San Francisco where they're selling them out of the warehouse. And I just kind of wanted to get that word out.
Oh, they've got masks on sale there?
They had some masks, yes. And they were the specialized kind that my son needed, like that were not N95 and higher. I found them off a website on the internet that was called Vog Mask, VOGMASK.com.
Yeah, forgive me, Tracy. I'd said before you can get them off the internet, but people want them immediately. Where's the place that you?
So when I looked on the internet, there was a phone number, and when I called the phone number, they said they were selling them out of their warehouse. They had a limited supply, and it was off of Oyster Bay Point,
I think. I'm Mark Gilarducci.
Okay, we're going to go now. We have to go to a live briefing on the fires from the Governor's Office of Emergency Services. Here it is.
Again, today's briefing is going to focus on updating all of the latest efforts happening this week and right now from across the state and the western states to assist those who have been impacted by the wildfires. Let me start off by saying on behalf of the governor and all of us that we express our thoughts and prayers for those who have been affected. We know it's a difficult time, but we're going to get through it together. Our priorities today, firefighting and life-saving, taking care of the thousands that have been evacuated and hurting, and looking at what's needed for the long haul in the recovery process. This includes individuals, businesses, tribal community groups, and everyone else that has been affected by the disaster. We need to tell all those who that are in this right now, we understand what the complexities are, we hear what the issues are, and we are working through it. You also need to know that we're working hard to get as much resources into the impacted area as possible. And an example of that, just behind me, there are hundreds of people working on the state's response from all the state agencies and departments to support our local governments and to support the communities that have been impacted, in addition to what's happening at the local level. Since the early hours of the emergency, we've put in motion tens of thousands of resources to support the growing needs. That's pushing out everything from meals to food to communications to firefighters, et cetera. This has been a nonstop operation here from the State Operations Center, and will continue until the situation is mitigated. The mutual aid system in California is second to none, and the system is operating as designed. We're also reaching, though, across state lines for resources and additional support. As of today, we received amazing support from the states of Nevada, Washington, Idaho, Montana, New Mexico, North and South Carolina, Oregon, and Arizona. And we're deeply appreciative of those assets. And we also are working on coordination of some international assistance. We're in our fifth day of response. And for many of these incidents, we're not slowing down any of the operations. In addition to the firefighting resources, we have 640 law enforcement officers and more than 8,000 firefighters, 650 fire engines from across California, and AGs and 170 engines from our supporting states. In addition, we currently have about 4,800 people in evacuation centers as of last night. There are 42 shelters that have been set up statewide for these incidents, and we're supplying over 2,000 special needs cots and other kinds of services for those shelters. At least 40,000 meals have been served, and more than 60,000 liters of water have been deployed through the through our strategic staging areas. 77 cell towers were damaged in the fires, and as of today, 64 of those cell towers have been restored to reestablish communications in the burned area. I want to say again that we are not out of this emergency. We're not even close to being out of this emergency. We're continuing to address the current and future needs. This includes those most at risk, such as the elderly, the very young, and those with access and functional needs issues. For those near and around the fires, please, I can't underscore this enough, listen to your local emergency services for possible notices of more evacuations, shelter updates, or road closures. That's important information for you and your family to know in the event that you get noticed for an evacuation. And even if you are not in the areas that have been impacted, driving around our state, you will see fire trucks and resources and convoys of vehicles moving around our roadways. Please make sure to give them the thoroughfare. Be concerned about that and careful as you're driving. They need to get to the fires as quickly as possible and get to work. So with that, I'm now going to turn it over to Chief Ken Penma from CAL FIRE, who will give us the fire update.
Thank you, Director Ghellarducci. Yes, this morning we are working on 21 large fires. That's down one from 22 yesterday, only because we've merged two fires into one. A number of these fires, as they grow, are actually growing together. Since the beginning of the siege, late Sunday evening, 191,437 acres have burned just in these fires. Sadly, the fatality count for these incidents has grown to 24. And as we've talked about every day, we continue to work very closely with local law enforcement to work and help them identify, match up unaccounted for persons and get access to the fire areas as it's rendered safe so they can continue to adjudicate that. But again, 24 persons to date. The last several days has not been filled with a lot of good news. And as Director Ghilarducci indicated, we are a long way from being done with this catastrophe. But I do want to share some good news this morning. And some significant work has been done on what's called the Wind Complex. That's the series of fires over in Nevada, Yuba, and Butte counties. Those fires are becoming significantly contained. We have significant improvements in containment. For example, the Cascade Fire is 45% contained this morning, and the McCourtney Fire in Nevada County is 89%. That's very, very good news. As those fires are wrapped up, those firefighting resources will very quickly be redeployed to other priority fires within the state. We're also looking at the Mendocino Lake Complex, and that's really made up of the Sulphur Fire near Clear Lake Oaks and the Redwood Valley Fire there in southern Mendocino. Sulphur Fire is 45% contained this morning. Very good progress there. And again, as we work through containing that, we'll make those resources available. And the Redwood Valley Fire in southern Mendocino, although large at 32,100 acres this morning, they're making very good progress on containment and continue to work well to get that done. Even on our large fires within the central Lake Napa complex is the Tubbs Fire, a fire that obviously burned down into Santa Rosa. It's 34,270 acres this morning, but I'm happy to report it's 10% contained. And while that may not sound like much compared to the others, that fire had 0% containment for several straight days. So firefighters are working very hard to get in and around that fire. The other fire, large fire in the southern Lake Napa complex is the Atlas Fire. That's the fire burning down through Napa County and now burning down into Solano County. It is 43,762 acres this morning and only 3% contained. Continued very active fire behavior on that fire. So again, with all that said, good progress. All of these incidents are feeling the effect of these resources coming into the state. Every incident this morning reported a large influx of fire engines, hand crews, and other firefighting equipment and personnel, getting folks relieved that have been out there from the beginning, getting them the rest they need so they can get back out. We continue hour by hour, more resources pour in from around California, and as Director Ghilarducci said, from around the country and internationally. Fire weather conditions, that's the less favorable piece for us right now. Right now we are looking at fire weather warnings and watches for critical fire weather throughout all of these fire areas through the weekend. And now we have added that same element to portions of Southern California from Santa Barbara to Ventura and Los Angeles County for the weekend. So this means over much of the state, we'll have critical dry humidity and windy conditions throughout the weekend. What this means is our fires are going to continue to burn erratically. They have the potential to shift in any direction at any time. Our incident management teams are taking all of this into account as they build their contingency planning and organize the efforts on these fires. While our focus is certainly on the ground, getting perimeter control and trying to contain the fires, our number one priority is always going to be life safety. And so there are a number of high priority areas on these fires that they're looking at. But in particular today, what we're watching very closely are the communities of Calistoga, Sonoma, Middletown, and Geyserville. There are trigger points established should fires hit certain areas that will trigger evacuation warnings evacuation, all the various types of evacuations. But these, all of these communities, certainly everybody in the fire areas need to pay close attention. But certainly in these communities, folks need to be very attentive to social media, to websites, to local news and fire information that's being posted. The situation is very dynamic and oftentimes can change by the minute or by the hour. So for those that may not have heard, two additional fatalities reported from Mendocino County, bringing the total for this siege to 26. So we're taking all this weather, we're taking this fire activity into consideration. And from the beginning, this is not about fighting the fire that we have. We are constantly anticipating the fires that may come. And so we are constantly leaning forward and getting very deep into the system to order resources in anticipation of the next event or in anticipation of what these fires may need. So we've been leaning very far forward. We are ordering numerous additional fire engines today from many of the states that Director Ghilarducci indicated. Those resources will come into the state and either be deployed directly to fires or be put in areas in critical locations in the state where they can respond to new fires. Understand, the night that these fires broke out, we had almost 100 fires. I believe 91 fires had started in the state that day. So there's lots of fires that go on in California, and they're being put out. So we've got to have resources available not only for these fires, but for new fires. So we will continue to keep that as a priority as well. We're also looking at requesting additional federal resources from our federal partners, and we're working on that right now and bringing more of those resources in to support the potential new fires that could occur. General Baldwin will certainly discuss, but we're working very closely with our military partners, even now looking at our federal military assets in Southern California with our partners at the Navy and Marine Corps. And standing up some aviation assets. So again, I want to emphasize making progress, long way from being out of the woods. Our focus is on fighting these fires, protecting lives, and getting ahead of the next set of events, ensuring public safety, getting the information out so folks can evacuate safely and help us get there. Lots of work going on investigating the fires. We get lots of questions there. I want folks to know that that is occurring. There isn't anything we can talk about there right now because those are active investigations. We all want to get to the bottom of what caused the fires. But at the end of the day right now, they need to do their job. And we need to do the job of putting these fires out. And that's going to be our focus. Thank you. And with that, introduce Warren Stanley, Acting Commissioner of the California Highway Patrol.
Thank you, Chief. As we continue to work together on this fire from the CHP, our perspective, what we've been doing, we have just a little less than 300 personnel assigned to this fire in various capacities: traffic control, general law enforcement, prevention of looting, escorting, and some other duties. Last night, we assisted the sheriff in Sonoma County with the evacuation of parts of Sonoma and other places there. We brought over 100 additional officers from here in the Sacramento area, the coastal area, and in the Central Valley, and from the Bay Area. And we used those 100 officers to assist in the evacuation. Those 100 officers, they were able to knock on 7,000 doors and let people know that they needed to evacuate. So I'm very appreciative of our officers' efforts, but I'm very appreciative of the public for listening and moving out of those areas so we can get them to someplace safe. One of the other things that we did yesterday, we assisted the Sonoma Developmental Center with moving some of their patients and their staff from a middle school to the Dixon Fairgrounds to put them in a safer location, and working along with the Department of Developmental Services and the National Guard. We have CHP personnel there and also National Guard personnel there at the fairgrounds to provide them safety and security and any assistance that they may need. I'd just like to reemphasize what Director Ghilarducci said and Chief Pimlott said. We just asked the public to continue to monitor your social media, the social media websites that are out there. Pay attention to what's going on because things are changing so fast. We want you to be able to keep up with it and be able to get you accurate information. And with that, I'll turn it over to General Baldwin from the National Guard.
Thanks, Commissioner. The California National Guard continues to provide a broad spectrum of military support to help people in both the affected and the threatened communities. We currently have over 1,600 personnel that are in the area, with more on the way. Last night, we mobilized and deployed a 500-person infantry battalion from Southern California, some of whom that flew into Moffett Federal Airfield late last night and are now on their way into the impacted area. The balance of that organization is moving up by truck and bus from Southern California. It should arrive sometime soon today. In addition to the ground troops that we have engaged, we have 27 California National Guard and Nevada National Guard aircraft engaged in supporting this operation, running a spectrum of missions from firefighting to damage assessment to transportation and fire mapping. In addition, we are doing a broad spectrum of other missions that include aerial firefighting, shelter support. We're providing tents. We're providing evacuation support. We're providing fuel for first responders. We're providing security, damage assessment, and communication support. As mentioned earlier, we are in very, very close communication with our federal partners from the Department of Defense, the United States Navy, the United States Marine Corps, and the National Guard of surrounding states to bring in additional assets as the need arises. I'll be followed by Director Giladucci.
Thanks, Chairman Ballin. As you can see, this is an all-hands-on-deck effort at every level of government. And also, let me just say, our private sector partners in the Grocers Association and a number of other private companies have also leaned forward. The utilities, telecommunications groups, all coming together to work with us in a comprehensive effort to respond to this incident. But with that, let me ask any questions.
Have you heard from the president? Are you interested in having him visit? And if so, when? What are the logistics of that?
So right now, the focus has really been on the firefight. Of course, the governor did ask for a presidential declaration, which was granted by the White House. FEMA, who has been a tremendous partner with us through this whole process, is engaged with us step by step as an integrated component. And so right now, we're not really looking at that aspect, but we're focusing on together responding to the incident. Well, certainly the President of the United States will support anything we need to do on that.
Can you elaborate a little bit on the, you mentioned foreign, help command from overseas or foreign assets. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, we've been working on Australian firefighters and fire management personnel. We have used the Australian firefighters here in California in past fires. We do have an ongoing training and working relationship with them. And so we're working on bringing those assets in.
Can you also address the missing persons? Is there a sort of statewide registry? Is there a way for people to sort of come at this from a statewide perspective? It seems to be sort of hit and miss, depending on which county people are missing.
We are working closely with the county sheriffs and the local emergency management organizations to coordinate that information. Each county is, of course, operating to identify and do the search operations to determine the status of those missing persons. And that all gets rolled up here to the state, at which we then, again, loop back around and provide any support to the various local governments.
Do we have a statewide number?
Yeah, and is there a statewide database or something where –
When you say statewide effort, really, we are supporting the local authorities with any resources that they need. The State Operations Center behind me then takes all of the information that we have on reports from the sheriff on fatalities and missing persons, and we coordinate the effort. So when you say statewide, it is a statewide effort in the sense of that we are supporting the local authorities in their effort to do the search and rescue operations.
Is that aggregated somewhere where the public can see it, where they can look on the statewide data?
Yeah, I don't have that answer to you right now. I'll follow back up with you. I think she was first.
When it comes to informing people to evacuate, why isn't there a system like an Amber Alert in place that will alert your phone. A lot of residents we're talking to didn't receive any warning and were relying on neighbors and heavy smoke.
Well, local authorities have the responsibility of pushing out messaging for evacuation orders, and they use a variety of means, emergency alert system. They use different kinds of social media, reverse 911. They also use programs like called Nixol. These are ways of getting out. But in addition to that, local law enforcement, the highway patrol, others go in and actually do door-to-door knocking to notify people about evacuations. And those are the programs that are used, and that information is pushed out. And to my knowledge, they were used and have been being used.
Do you think that
should be improved? Right now, I think the focus is just making sure we can get the messages out, and then we can come back and talk about improvements down the road. Yes.
I was wondering, with regard to the missing, the people who are unaccounted for, two quick questions. One is, do we have a statewide total? And the other is, with 463 still unaccounted for in Sonoma County, should we be preparing for a high death toll out of this, higher than?
Well, second part of the question first. It's hard to speculate. Look, this was a massive fire that came through fast. The effort is to adjudicate the missing numbers. So that kind of speaks for itself. I can't really speculate on the number that we're going to get. This is a bad situation, and so we know that there are fatalities involved. The statewide numbers are what were just reported by Chief Pemlot. We have 26 fatalities associated with this incident.
Fatalities, but what about statewide missing?
We're talking to all the counties on missing persons, and that's where those numbers come in. The same numbers that we're reporting.
Employees of PG&E are telling Arms of the Press that this may have been blowing transformers that started this fire. Can you address some of those?
So, and I do understand some information by employees were put in the press. Those are things that we're investigating the fires, and there's a lot of discussion, a lot of things in papers, a lot of rumors. Investigators are going right to the cause and the areas where these fires started and conducting their investigation using all the tools at their disposal. We're going to just continue down our path to do that regardless of what's being said out there. That's all speculation, all rumor. The facts will come out when the investigations are done and those are brought forward. Until that time, we're letting the investigators do their job unimpeded while we focus on getting these fires put out.
Chief, question. You mentioned that you're requesting more support. Is this aside from yesterday's request?
That is correct. That is correct. We're putting additional orders in as we speak to get additional folks on the road, both at the state level and at the federal level.
Do we have some numbers?
We can get those back for you later. We're currently working with states to see what they can provide, and we'll have some numbers later.
Thank you. They're talking about winds are kind of high today. And talking about the weekend, it's going to be high. So are you ready for that, for more wind coming in and possibly continuing going it through?
Yes, and that was how I led things off there with all of the incidents are anticipating erratic wind conditions, shifting winds all weekend. And as you might imagine, when the wind shifts, it puts pressure on a different part of the fire line. And so they're doing their best to anticipate where those are, and that's where they put resources and try to shore up the fire lines. It's also where they look at where critical evacuations may need to occur and those things. All that are part of their contingency plans on the existing incidents, absolutely. In the big picture, we're absolutely anticipating what the potential impacts of this critical fire weather could be statewide, which is why we're leaning very far forward to get additional resources deployed where they need to be in anticipation of new fire starts.
What goes into determining new evacuation orders?
Again, looking at predicted weather conditions, proximity to infrastructure, population, et cetera, and then trigger points. And we focus on 12, 24, 36-hour windows constantly to see where the fire is going to be, which gives us an indicator of where to focus those potential evacuations.
What do you mean by trigger points?
So if a fire reaches a certain ridgeline, reaches a certain road, that tells us that within such amount of time, it's going to hit a community. And so when it hits that trigger point, that's when we turn on the evacuation, allowing time for residents to evacuate.
People who are sort of in one of these
possible trigger point areas? Should they just leave?
So we are encouraging everyone to pay close attention, and with you're within a fire area, we always encourage everyone to leave ahead of an evacuation, orderly leave, find a place to go safely, and get out, absolutely.
We're going to take one more question, and we're going to call.
Yes. Well, the you know, certainly the cell phone towers are critical assets, and the fact that we lost so many was a factor in people getting information and communicating. It's been a top priority working with the utilities to get those cell towers back up, or in many cases we put portable cell towers in place to be able to until we can get those cell towers back up. In addition, it was a little complicated because the fiber lines, it's beyond the cell towers, but the fiber lines that carry data were damaged. And so that also needed to be addressed. In some cases, the fiber lines that were damaged were in active fire areas. So it was complicated in that you couldn't get crews in immediately to fix those fiber lines that were damaged because there was active fire going on. As the fire was mitigated and as soon as we could get crews in, we've moved those crews in place to be able to repair the fiber lines. As of yesterday, they've made a lot of progress in repairing fiber lines. And as I mentioned, many of the cell sites are coming back up. We restored cell coverage to many parts of like downtown Napa and areas in Sonoma. So, you know, the reality is in these kind of fire situations, you know, it's like not like maybe a disaster where it happens and you can get in immediately because the fire is so active. We need to work with the fire officials to be able to coordinate that
okay,
recovery.
We'll call it there. If you want to do some one-on-ones with some of the folks up here, we can try and coordinate that later.
Thank you for coming.